This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Tracks on the Line, the show on Trek.fm, where we provide audio commentary for every episode of Star Trek Picard. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
And don't worry, we're not in the same room. We're not even in the same state.
We're the same room. I'm on Mike's lap.
Ah, get away from me. 6 feet. 6 feet. Yeah. We're social distancing. We're being very socially distant. But we're still watching Star Trek Picard together, and we're watching episode 9 from season 1.
Episode 9. Oh my God. I'm having a hard time with this.
Hey, before we get started, I want to give a shout out to Trey. How's it going, Trey? Trey has been listening to us for a very long time. He says that he listens to us while he's driving his 18-wheeler. I do not envy you. When it comes to that job, that looks like the hardest job in the world. I have enough trouble driving my Honda Civic. I can't imagine driving something with 18 wheels. So thank you very much for listening, and thanks for your tweets, and keep in touch. Okay. Et in Arcadia Ego, part one.
Want to take another run at that?
Ego, part one.
You're getting further away from it. Let's keep moving. Let's move along.
This is part one of the season finale, whatever that means. I mean, it's a continuing show. Does this seem any less connected to the last episode than it would be connected to the next episode? I don't know. Okay.
What just happened?
I'm just saying. Should we get this started? It's been a long week.
It's been pretty normal for me.
That's because you never leave the house to begin with.
I know, it's great.
Okay, so we're past the CBS All Access logo, and we're going to start this up in 3, 2, 1, start. Previously on is very artfully done, more so than usual, I think. Kind of interesting, but it works. So, lots going on here. Been a long season.
It's been, such a long season. All those previous 8 episodes.
Yeah.
What do you mean long season? It's been nothing. It's been a flash.
Are you going to watch all 10 episodes in a row leading up to the premiere or the finale?
Yes.
Are you going to, like in the same day?
Yes.
I mean, are you going to do it the day before as well?
The day before?
I mean, like, are you just going to watch the 9 episodes every day from like here until the show comes out?
Yeah, that.
Okay. Are you going to wake up at, for you, 3 o'clock in the morning to watch it as soon as it drops?
No.
Okay. I was just wondering whether or not you were a real fan.
I'm not.
No. Okay.
I hate the show. I think it's the worst. Everyone knows it.
So here we are into the episode proper, and I like this sequence where they're going through the little portal. And you see all their reactions, starting with Jurati, and then, like, I mean, they each have a distinct reaction to what they're doing. And
yeah,
it's really well done. I mean, here's the thing. Akiva Goldsman, as we've discussed on many occasions, you know, rather polarizing figure in the world of film.
Is he? I don't know if any... How many people are like... Like they got the filmmaker trading cards and are like, I've got two Goldsmans. I'll trade you my two Goldsmans for one Soderbergh. How many people are like that? I don't know how many people are like, Goldsman's not my cup of tea. I don't think that's a thing.
Oh, no. That's definitely a thing. It's something which I find to be super duper bizarre. Everybody makes bad movies, but, you know, I mean, the guy has written a number of really, really... I mean, he does have an Oscar. It's for a movie which I think is bad, but, you know, he's written, like, a lot. I mean, he made Batman Forever. He did A Time to Kill, The Client. But then he's also done this. And anyway, the reason why I bring all this up is I like Akiva Goldsman. No, I'm going to take that back. I love Akiva Goldsman as a writer. But I honestly think that watching stuff like this and his work on Discovery, he's a better director than he is a writer.
Whatever. I think he belongs in television. I think that film as a medium has been troubled for decades. And I think that there are some creative people who belong in the writer-driven world of television.
Well, that makes perfect sense, considering the fact that he has essentially run writers' rooms for movies, right? Like, he was the head of, like, the Transformers writers' room and stuff like that, which, I mean, they're trying to fit, like, movies into the TV box now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So having him, you know, do TV, it makes sense. But whatever. I've always loved Akiva Goldsman, and I think that he's done a lot of really good work on Star Trek. So
yeah, he's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Before we get too far into this episode.
Before we get too far into this episode.
I want to just ask people to keep an eye out. In this episode, there are a number of really good shots of Captain Picard's shoes. And they seem to be off-the-rack shoes. They seem like they're basketball shoes. I don't know what they are, but I want them, and I can't figure out what they are. So please, as you are watching this episode with us, look for Picard's shoes, and please, if you know what they are, let me know so that I can track them down and have my Air Picards.
Okay.
All right. So, these orchid things.
Yeah, those are weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting, I mean, I, you know, this episode goes to some really weird places, you know, maybe not totally unexpected, but kind of stepping outside of the comfort zone of Star Trek in a lot of ways and doing things which, I mean, I guess it's not super duper weird for Star Trek. Maybe it's just that, you know, we've always thought of it as being just like, whatever, there's a giant hand in space. Why wouldn't there be a giant hand in space? You know, like one of those things. But like, you know, you see a giant orchid, which is like wrapping itself around a ship and then burning up in the atmosphere. I mean, I don't know. But look at the effects here. And I mean, not just, you know, the quality of the effects themselves, but like from a filmmaking perspective, from a directorial perspective. And this is something which, again, Goldsman has done I think, exceedingly well. And who knows exactly how it all breaks down. But, like, you look at, like, episode 3 of Discovery, which he directed, you know, very similar to this. And in terms of, you know, just sort of like the you know, visceral quality and whatnot, it's impressive stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's really well done. When the flowers showed up, my first thought was, that is a really interesting choice that seems super deliberate. Because, like, it's not like, oh, this is a planetary defense system, where it's just serving the point of, like, saying that this planet does have a defense system, because it is sort of in secret in some ways. But then they get down to the planet and they, like, walk in to Synth City and are like, oh, hey, everybody. And the synths are like, oh, man, humans? That's crazy. What's going on, human beings? We haven't seen one of you in a long time. I mean, aside from Data. I mean, no, Brent Spiner. I mean, no, Soong, whatever. Don't dig too hard on this one. Anyway, the point is, we have a planetary defense system, but we're also super cool with outsiders. So it's like, like, there's like the super deliberate choice of having flowers as your planetary defense system, the super deliberate choice of having like a planetary defense system for a colony that is seemingly very open to outsiders. It's, I mean, this is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a, I mean, the orchid thing has been sort of like sprinkled in throughout the season, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Here it is, coming up right now, directed by Akiva Goldsman. I need that on a shirt. I need the gold font to put it on like a navy blue shirt. I think that would be like really sharp. So get on that.
Gold on navy blue. Isn't that a football thing?
I mean, what's not? But no, but just I just need a transparency with directed by Akiva Goldsman in a similar font to that.
Is this a request? Would you like me to do this for you?
Yes, that's what I'm asking you to do.
All right, cool. I'll do that. Thank you.
So, here we are into Act One, and look, I know there's a thing. There's like a thing. Like anytime like an actor like cries in a scene, I'm always hesitant to say like, oh, they were really good in that scene, you know, or oh man, that performance is so good, because like I think that there's, you know, this sort of like weird perception that like, oh, if you can cry on screen, you're a good actor, right?
Yeah, that's stupid. Anybody can cry on screen. I can cry like that.
Exactly.
It's not even hard.
I cried earlier today, you know, but I didn't even have to be on screen. But before she started crying in this scene.
Oh, I do have to be on screen, by the way.
Okay. Before she started crying in this scene, I was like, this is a really good performance. I mean, it was so telling, like the way that she was sort of like hesitant and everything like that. I mean, she communicated so much through basically through facial expressions. And Alison Pill is a good actress. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I think in the modern age, you're supposed to say actor, because actress is gendered, so you just canceled yourself.
I'm sorry, you're right, actor. So
I've done the same thing. Who cares? We're learning. We're getting there.
Yeah. No. I mean, they bring that up in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Do they? I haven't seen it.
Actor, because the term actress is nonsensical. Yeah, I like this scene where Picard is just like, so we're doing this stuff and I'm dying, but whatever.
Yeah, it's one of his Picardiest moments.
And he's really loving those pockets too, so good for him. Good for Picard to finally get some pockets.
I agree. Pockets are a must for any uniform. It's ridiculous that they didn't have pockets for so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Raffi goes through a lot emotionally in this episode, and it's the first time, like, from beginning to end of an episode, I was, like, 100%, like, in step with Raffi's emotional state.
Yeah.
I was like, I get what she's doing. Like, I get her, like careful excitement while going way faster than she's comfortable going. Mm-hmm. And then when it's over, going, all right, and that's the last time.
Yep.
We're not doing that again. Yeah. I get both of those.
That was me on the Aerosmith Rock and Roller Coaster.
All right.
I mean, the thing about that is it's like you don't realize what's happening, and then you just start going, and you're going like 60 miles per hour instantly, right? And then like you're halfway through the ride before you realize like there was like a stoplight and went from red to yellow to green. And then you're like, if I just look at that and I know when it's going to green, then I'll be okay, right? So I'm going to get back on this ride. And as long as I know that it's coming, now that I know to look at that stoplight, I'll be fine. And then you get on the ride a second time, you're like, red, yellow, you know, because it doesn't work no matter how much you know that it's coming. It's still...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The Rock and Roller Coaster.
I feel like you might have dreamed this because I've never heard of it.
You never heard of the Aerosmith Rock and Roller Coaster?
Never heard of it.
Oh my God, they have a whole thing at the beginning where there's like a video thing where they've got Aerosmith and they're talking to
All right. Okay.
What, you know, fine. You live very close to it. So as soon as reopen Disney World after we've made it through the apocalypse, go to
2043, baby. It's gonna be good times.
It'll still hold up. Go to the Rock and Roller Coaster at Disney Hollywood Studios. While you're there, check out Galaxy's Edge. Okay, so here they're making the decision to go see if there's any survivors on the Borg cube. Which that crash of the Borg cube, I mean, oh. Gorgeous, right?
Oh yeah, it was really cool. The depiction of like atmospheric entry with the fire, and it seemed very, very well thought out.
Yeah.
Oh, it was pretty cool.
And the scale here. I mean, we've never really gotten scale like this in Star Trek before. Not really.
Well, we've had like hints of it. Like, there's that shot was not far different from like Next Gen's occasional matte paintings,
I guess, and maybe a bit more effective. I mean, I guess it's pretty similar to, I mean, in scale to like the opening scene in Best of Both Worlds, but
yeah, it reminded me of when they were going to the like, I guess because they both have looking over a horizon onto a Borg structure, but the first episode of Descent. Where they go down to the planet and they're like, hey, look at that Borg thing. Let's go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Which was also a very large structure. I mean, that's just a painting. Just happens to be CGI with movement and whatnot.
Yeah, but it works.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And there's Elnor. He survived.
Yeah.
Oh, those guys didn't. Man, she is such a badass, right? I mean, look at that. It's just like... There's 7 of 9, just, you know, kicking butt.
Yeah.
As she does.
Yeah, she's great. I still have conflicting emotions about 7 of 9.
She's the best. You know, I had a 7 of 9 t-shirt when Voyager first aired, and it was just like a picture of, you know, 7 of 9. It's like the traditional... you know, publicity still, and I wore it every single time I voted for Obama, and now they have like a new one, like a new shirt, but it's like now like the new publicity still of her, And I want to just, you know, just I feel like I need to get a 7 of 9 shirt for in time for the election in November. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. What's the plan, guys? What are they gonna do?
This is the second episode in a row where they like make a plan, change the plan in the same scene, and then execute second plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I mean, it's fine to just not show us the point where they decide on what to do next and just go to what they're doing next. It's just a weird choice to do twice.
Yeah. I do like that moment where Elnor's like, it's different now because you're dying. And everyone's like,
ugh. Yeah, Picard, why didn't you give him the speech? And he's like, oh, like the speech would work on Elnor. Come on. Romulan Legolas, what good would that do? He doesn't know what's going on. He wouldn't understand it. He'd be like, what do you mean, not treat you like a dying man? But you are. I don't get it. Romulan.
But I also got the impression that like he didn't tell him, and someone else was like, hey, Elnor, Picard's dying. And Elnor's like, what? And they're like, but don't say anything. And he's like, what do you mean, don't say anything? Why wouldn't I say anything? Absolute candor. Didn't you see that episode? You know.
What would I say? Like, you're dying? You want me to not say that? It would be hard to discuss it.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, come on. How messed up is it that Elnor is there? They're talking to Elnor. And then they go, all right, let's go. And they walk away. And where do they go? A place with a cat.
I didn't even think about that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, they
he was
just
that
totally
close.
Screwed over Elnor.
He was that close.
There's one more episode. It might happen. It might happen. Oh, my God.
If it doesn't happen, I'm going to say this. Elnor better get to see a cat. It's season
that
2.
That is so crazy. He came so close. I didn't even think about that. Oh, my God. Oh,
it's messed up, right?
It's super messed up. It's like the most messed up thing I could possibly think of. Whoa. I mean, there's some messed up stuff on this show, you know? I mean, they got, like, people, like, you know.
Oh, yeah. They killed Acheb with the eye pulling out and And 7 of 9 blew up that bejazzled lady, and like, but Elnor not seeing a cat—that's like
that's
at least 3 times more messed up than those other 2 things combined.
I mean, you have people seeing visions and freaking out and like scratching off their own faces.
Well, that's no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, compared
that's
to
just Burning Man.
Oh, wow. That's going to mess me up. I will never be able to, because I mean, like when I saw that scene with the cat, I got super excited. I changed my name on Twitter to Spot 2 fan account. You know, I mean, I was really excited. And now I'm never going to be able to watch that scene with excitement, just disappointment, because I'm never going to be able to not think about Elnor.
Well, that's what I'm here for. To ruin things.
Yeah, you do a good job at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so, I mean, we are here at this colony.
We're at another place. I mean, it's kind of weird, right? I mean, like Picard went on a mission. They went to another planet. And they arrived there to find a bunch of the citizens of this place wearing super revealing, awkward clothes. I mean, is this next gen?
It feels like justice. As soon as they got in there and, like, there's the people, like, running around kicking, like, a soccer ball, wearing, like, scantily clad clothes and stuff, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting some strong justice vibes here, you know?
Yep. And also, they're all technically clones, so there's another episode similarity. Like, they're also, like, in this weird, like MTV Beach House environment. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all weird. Like, this is very TNG to me.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, you even got Brent Spiner there playing a relative of Data in a way.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, every time Brent Spiner shows up as another Soon, like, I have to go through this thing where I'm like, okay, fine. I guess it just happens that way. And, like, for years, I was like, it's just crazy how many times Brent Spiner has played, like, a descendant or ancestor of another character that he played. And then I saw photos of Stephen King's kids.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, so it could happen.
I guess that's
Stephen
just how
King's
it is.
Kids are just Stephen King again.
Okay. I don't think I've seen pictures of his kids.
Some genes are that strong that they just keep going. They're all dominant genes. Next generation, basically same DNA, some minor remixing. Like, oh yeah, this one, he's a little older.
It does get to, at some point, it's kind of like, okay, guys, okay, all right, guys. I mean, if you really want to do that, but seriously, guys, you know, I mean, like, when they did it on Enterprise, it's like, well, that's to be expected, right? But here, it's just kind of like, really? You know?
I get what you're saying. You're saying that you had wildly lowered expectations while watching Enterprise.
I didn't say that.
It sounded like you did.
I didn't say that.
Well, if for example, Brent Spiner were to play a character and then play another character on Quantum Leap, would they be related or the same person?
I don't even know what that means.
Okay, don't worry about it.
Okay. It's just a weird choice. And if you, I mean, this feels like fan service, right? I mean, they could have done any number of things.
Well, it seems like they're setting it up for him to be played by a different person next time around.
I mean, could they be doing that? I guess. I mean, maybe they're setting it up so that he's a regular character on the show next time around, even if he's not Data. That could be a thing. Yep. I read one theory on Twitter that they're setting it up so that Picard will be downloaded into the Gollum.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That doesn't make sense to me. I think that this is really, I mean, like we talked about before, kind of a Battlestar Galactica scenario.
I hope it's you.
Well, actually, that is, I think, a very reasonable guess, because one thing that they keep on hinting at, you know, in like any interview or whatever with him is like, you never know. You never know. It's science fiction. So it could be Hugh. That's a possibility.
I hope it's you. Okay, all right. So here we are at this vision thing. All right.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this.
Okay.
This vision has had problems since the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And the justification that it's like specifically like programmed to be effective for the recipient starting to wear a little thin.
Okay.
Because this has a lot of specific information, and seemingly this is like the accurate read. And it also, like, it has footage of things that happened after it was made. It has footage of things that they couldn't have seen. It's got data in it. It's got the Delta on it. It's like this vision is a mess. Like, if it had been like one vision that didn't have data in it, didn't have the Delta in it, didn't have shots of the Mars attack, then I would be a lot more comfortable with it. But every time they show up this vision, it seems to get muddier.
Could it be adaptive? Because like it
Why
shows...
is it adapting now? This is the third time we're seeing it, and this time it's different again, with more stuff that people who made it should not have seen. So is her memory conflating it with other things? Is she like confabulating her memory of this mind meld experience? And if so, why would this information be reliable? And how could it be specifically coded with the frequencies to like contact this other civilization? I mean, guys.
No, I mean, because like you have in that vision right there, you have a vision of the people's reaction to the vision, right?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the vision and also like not seeing the actual vision itself, but seeing some sort of connective thread. It's going all impressionistic and connecting to what they're imagining and remembering. Sure. It's just there's a lot of work to go into it, and I wish that they had just stuck with one and not muddied it.
Yeah. Okay, watching this scene, like I've watched this scene, this is the third time now that I've seen this, and it's always bothered me, and I think I'm just finally starting to wrap my head around what's going on. Not in terms of like the plot, but in terms of like the like how it works as a piece of dramatic storytelling or whatever. Like it always felt weird to me when Soong said, shame on you. You know, you did a terrible thing, but you want to try to make something right, you know, like do this. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of harsh, but whatever, you know, maybe that's just how he does his thing. But then there's the scene at the end where they're like, lock her up. And he's like, yeah, no, you know, I mean, she's been helping me out quite a bit and stuff and everything. And just and there's nothing that he said which makes me think that he's a bad guy, right? But I also think that they're setting that up. Okay, here's the best scene in the episode.
Yep.
Because Spot 2 is in it. And yes, he looks like my cat. Not as much as Spot did, but, you know. Oh, and my cat just got up to see what's going on. So
it's just heartbreaking that Elnor isn't there.
It is. It is. Now it's ruined for me. But whatever.
I honestly did not. I assumed that you had made that connection.
I had not made that connection. I haven't seen, I mean, I haven't really, you know, but I haven't seen anyone else make that connection either.
Weird.
Maybe people have, but.
I think we might be the only people tracking Elnor's hero's journey to seeing a cat.
Yeah. We should start up a Twitter account, you know, which just every episode has Elnor seen a cat. No.
Or I should just make draw some pictures of Elnor seeing cats, or just Photoshop Elnor into shots of cats from the internet.
I think you should do that. Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got some plans. and we've got some time to execute those plans. Actually, I don't really have a lot more time. My job is pretty much exactly the same as it's always been.
Yeah, but now you're not leaving the house.
Yeah, so my life is pretty much exactly as it's always been.
Yeah.
It's actually a little bit better because now when the in-laws are like, hey, can you come over? We can say, no.
Yeah.
I can't help you with your email. Sorry.
Yeah.
You want to do a FaceTime? Because that's as far as it's going to go.
Yeah. My parents are having a little trouble too. Like there have been a few times where I've dropped stuff off for them and I like open up the door and set it down on the front porch and then close the door. And then they like, you know, come out. Like the other day, like my mom came out to see me, you know, and she's like, hey. And then like I ran back up to like wipe down the doorknob, you know, with a disinfectant, you know, wipe. Mm-hmm. And she starts going to open up the door. And I'm like, no, stop. Stop. You do not get it. What the heck is wrong with you? You know? I swear to God, she sent me for groceries the other day and she had this huge list of groceries, right? Which is fine. But then the last two items on the list, and this was just legit, just there, like whatever. Last two items on the list, sympathy card for loss of father, sympathy card for loss of mother. I'm like, I was not expecting that twist ending, but all right, cool. I'll get those for you.
Jesus.
It's been a weird time.
Oh my God.
It's almost as weird as the lens that they used for this shot. What's going on here? Anyway.
Well, I mean, they had to get a lot in the shot. It's an awkward environment. It's weird.
Yeah.
The whole scene is weird because he's like trying to manipulate this synthetic person who doesn't understand this guy's manipulation. It's an awkward scene. It's like, I don't know. It's weird. But like, okay, what's the deal with Sutra? Like, why is she acting? Why is like every time she shows up, she seems to be like trying to seduce everyone?
I don't know. It is weird, isn't it?
It's very strange. She's got this weird vibe. Like she's like she's like a Narek's sister, quotation marks. Like what's going on with these bad guys where they're like super touchy? It's creepy. I mean, we got to get those two together.
I mean, it's a weird choice, you know. But whatever. I mean, maybe we'll learn more next episode in terms of her motivations and whatnot. I mean, there's a lot going on in this episode, and it's hard to keep everything straight in terms of who's doing what and why. Because of all the sort of like manipulation and backstabbing and all that stuff. But, you know, I guess that's just how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, this whole episode is weird. I've seen some backlash on the internet web about this episode. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, I don't like it. And I think I know what they mean.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, like the whole time I'm like, this is weird.
Yeah, also like,
which I'm okay with, you know?
The idea that like the admonition plot line like is so complex. Like this message, it's not meant for organics. Organics intercepted. Organics go crazy. They create a cult to destroy synthetics, but it's meant for synthetics. Synthetics get the message and they go, oh, this is a message for synthetics that we can destroy them. So the admonition is also a self-fulfilling prophecy. And like, it's, I mean, like it's an intricate web, but it's like kind of like a house of cards where like if any one of those things falls, the whole thing collapses. Because like if Romulans had been like, I don't get it. I don't know what that was. I can't make sense of it. It looks like nonsense to me. But like somebody came out coherent enough to go, like, I think it's about synthetic life. Mm-hmm. I guess it's about synthetic life killing everyone. Whatever. I guess we got to prevent synthetic life. Like, and it's so bizarre. I don't know. I'm sort of torn about the whole admonition plot line.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
I know that there are, you know, varying types of androids and everything like that. And you know, they can look however, you know, they want them to look or whatever. But I do think that the intention with the gold androids was to kind of give them a Data-like complexion, right? I mean, that I'm thinking that was the intent. But
yeah, I assumed that they were like previous generations before, like, they reached like the Soji Vaj, like,
right,
Nexus 6 level, where, right, they're more human than human.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like if they were going for the Data vibe, right, they kind of messed it up. Like, it doesn't look quite right, you know?
See, I think it looks very close to the way Data looked in the movies.
Well, I mean, that was an interesting thing, which I remember people talking about. I remember going to conventions and saying, you know, like, after Generations came out, and they're like, oh, it's so weird because, you know, seeing it in the theater, people finally have a chance of seeing what Data looks like, because, yeah, all of their TVs are adjusted improperly, right?
Yeah, and, you know, standard definition, you can't really pick up the details of the makeup, and mm-hmm. also they didn't put that many details into the makeup because of standard definition.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like moving pieces behind why Data looks different in the movies. I think that partly he was updated in order to have something to look at in such a big environment with such a resolution of film and film projection. You needed to put something more in there because white makeup, it wasn't enough. It just doesn't look right. It looks like, oh, why is Picard talking to a mime?
But like, he didn't look weird, like, in this, like in the beginning of the season when you had Data.
Like, no, he looked totally normal, that Data. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but the color didn't look weird. You know?
No, it didn't look weird. I think that they kind of split the difference. I think that they made him look a little bit more like he did on the show, but they updated it. I think that Data's complexion and skin tone is a complicated question, and I don't think that has a simple answer.
Yeah. I guess I never really noticed the gold until the movie, like, seeing it on the big screen. I always thought he was just white, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, he had yellow in his face. He had like a kind of tint to the makeup. It was always supposed to be there. It was just never supposed to be the same because it kept changing. Anyway, mm-hmm. We are with Picard trying to stop the genocide that he was trying to stop on the other side the other time. I mean, like, he's stopping genocide left and right, but none of them are working.
Yeah, well, he's trying to, but yeah. But I like how they call him out on this, you know, because as he's saying this, you as a viewer are kind of like, oh my God, he's doing this thing again? Like, this is just like his thing, you know? Like, he just loves doing this. It's his hobby. Some people watch movies, some people try to stop genocides, you know?
I mean, you know, to each his own. I mean, but like, I wish that, like, somebody had, like, said, all right, guys, I know that you're against the synthetic banned, but let's be honest here. When it wasn't banned, it also wasn't super cool.
Oh, because, like, they were basically treating them as, like,
you guys were basically slaves.
Yeah.
that's messed up, right? Can we get on board with that being messed up? Mm-hmm. And maybe like there's an ethical reason for the ban. Like, hey, maybe we ban this until we stop abusing it.
Yeah, but that's not, I don't think that was the intent behind it, right?
No, but if you said to me like, hey, I want to ban creating synthetic life, I'd be like, okay, we might not agree on why, but I might be on the same side.
Okay. All right. But when you have a case like this where it's like these are just a bunch of androids living their lives, you know?
Yeah, these are a bunch of android twins just hanging out at an MTV beach house. I mean, let's just let them live.
Yeah.
I think that this is definitely a different situation. I think that it would be very hard for the Federation to go in there and say, all right, we're going to ban you.
Yeah.
That seems like they couldn't do that.
You would think, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically a village, so.
This seems weird to me, too. She's like, they're like, we're going to lock her up. And she's like, no, please don't. Like, and then she says, I don't deserve this. Is she saying, I don't deserve to be locked up? Or is she saying, I don't deserve to be set free?
She's saying, I don't deserve to be set free. I don't deserve the opportunity to do the work that I want to do here. I don't deserve any of it. I probably do deserve to be locked up.
But okay.
I think I can help you.
Because the way that it's like worded and the way that it kind of, it sounds like she's saying, I don't deserve to be locked up.
That's not how I read it at all.
That's how I read it both times I watched it. And I was like actively looking for it to not be that. But. Uh-oh, there's Commodore O. And there's a Romulan warbird. And so, 217 more of them.
So when Commodore O says to like her bosses, I'm going to take some time off. I'm going on a sabbatical. I'm going to be gone for don't know exactly. Don't have an ETA. Going to be gone for a while. And then she, you know, gets into her clothes for war and gets on a Romulan ship. Like, can people from, like, Starfleet still IM her or something? Like, does she have to occasionally, like, go into a holodeck room and, like, create a fake, like, MTV beach house type environment and say, yeah, what's up?
I mean, if she's
That sounds great. That sounds great. That's, you know what? Schedule it. We'll see what, I mean, I pencil it in. Let's just say pencil it in.
No, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, Mission Impossible 2, where she's like, you know, you didn't tell us where you were going. And she's like, if I told you where I was going, it wouldn't be a vacation, you know?
A lot of things in life are like Mission Impossible 2 to you, aren't they?
Only the best things.
Okay.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at TrekFM, or you can send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the line. Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm JMax Hagel on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah. You've got that cool graphic representing the timelines of Star Trek Discovery Season 2.
Yeah, and the Terminator timelines.
Oh, yeah. That looks good. I mean, like, it's something where you could like, hang that on a
wall.
Here's
a fun fact.
Yeah.
Some people can look at that.
Uh-huh.
Read it and go, I get it.
Okay. When you meet one of those people, introduce me to them. because I don't think they exist. but it does make a very cool piece of abstract art. And I was thinking, like, what?
Yeah, I've got the Terminator timelines on a mug.
I mean, that's cool. Like, it would look really good on a wall, you know? And mm-hmm. I mean,
you can get it on a wall.
I know. Tell people where you can get it. If you can get it, where can you get it?
It's on Redbubble.
Redbubble. Okay. I mean, yeah, what's
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Well, that's not helpful at all.
No, it's not. I'm not here to help you.
Well, you should be. You're not helping me. I was trying to help you. I was trying to help you sell your crap. It doesn't matter.
All right. Well, I'm not even making any money off of it yet.
Well, not yet, because you can't even remember where people are supposed to go to buy the freaking stuff.
Well, so that's kind of on
you.
I agree.
But I was trying to think of, like, you know, because I like one of those would look nice. But I was trying to think of, like, what would be, like, a good timeline to do. Like, I mean, the JJ verse thing seems pretty straightforward, you know. But
it's simple and dumb.
But like, what would be a good one? Like, what would be a good time travel thing? I mean, maybe Back to the Future, right? I mean, that's the classic.
It doesn't work. That's the problem. Doesn't work at all. Like, the Back to the Future one would be covered in so many squiggles and nonsense. It would have to have a few, like, emojis in there. Like, is there an oops emoji? Because I would need to have a lot of oops emojis on the Back to the Future timeline.
Okay. What would be another good one? I'm trying to think of some good time travel movies. I mean, 12 Monkeys? I mean, could you do 12 Monkeys?
12 Monkeys is one timeline.
Okay, all right.
It's a lot of jumps within one timeline. I'm working on the 12 Monkeys, the series timeline.
Okay.
And it might kill me.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. All right, well, whatever. We'll put a pin in that and come back to it later. Let's see. Next time, try to remember where people can buy that.
I will.
Okay.
I will. Next time, I'll have it ready.
All right, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K, and you can also find me on FilmDamagePod.com doing a show called Film Damage with this guy over here. And this week, Wednesday, March 25th, is our 10th anniversary of podcasting together, so we're going to have something cool up there for that. And that'll be fun. And, we'd also like to thank our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thanks, Norm. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer yourself, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. All right. Just one more episode left of Star Trek Picard. Coming to you next week. But until then, Max, the line must be drawn where?
At your front door, man. Stay inside.